My name is Madeline Sterling, and I'm the Government Relations Coordinator for STS. Welcome to our second annual session, STS Key Contacts, Advocates for Cardiothoracic Surgery. Thank you for joining us. We depend on Key Contacts to be the face of the specialty in Congress, so I'm really excited to tell you all more about the program. Advocacy is a right specifically mentioned in the Constitution, as I'm sure most of you know. The First Amendment allows us to petition the government for a redress of grievances. I promise this PowerPoint will be quick enough to not add to your list of grievances today, and then we'll get on to the good stuff. Key contacts describing their experiences, surgeons pretending to be actors, an expert panel, and awards, because I love a good award. Key contacts leverage their expertise to influence Congress in several ways. The biggest STS advocacy events of the year are STS fly-ins. STS members from across the country travel to DC to speak with congressional offices about legislative and regulatory issues that affect cardiothoracic surgery, from research funding to physician payment to legislation addressing specific diseases. Many key contacts have formed lasting relationships with their members of Congress from attending fly-ins. Here we can see several real key contacts at the June and November fly-ins of last year. As Dr. Grover, who's pictured in one of those photos above, will tell you in a minute, attending these meetings is a lot less awkward than posing for these photos in the poorly lit offices, so please do take time to do so. The other most impactful ways that we engage with members of Congress is by bringing them onto your turf. Through site visits, representatives and senators can see firsthand the role every surgeon plays in the communities they represent in Washington. Site visits allow you to explain how an issue affects the delivery of medicine in a really memorable, hands-on way, and it makes it easy to establish yourself as a future resource, as many of the people in this room have done. And also, I would note that it automatically makes you a shoo-in for the Advocacy Monthly Key Contact Connect, it's a bit of a mouthful, we're working on it, section of the Advocacy Monthly mailer, which I have on good authority that at least 20 people read, including my mother, so you don't want to miss out on that opportunity for publicity. So many people say that they would like to get more involved with advocacy, but they don't really have time to come to DC or spend an hour hosting a member of Congress on any given day. But luckily, key contacts can influence their members of Congress in much quicker ways, through phone calls, quick meetings at a district office, 20 minutes from your hospital, attending a town hall in an evening if that works better with your schedule, all quick and easy ways to get the issues that matter most to you on your congressional agenda. And no matter what kind of advocacy you choose to do, STS staff is ready to help you prep, answer any questions that you have, give you talking points, and I understand that as a member of that team, I might seem a little biased, so I'm going to let a few real key contacts describe their experiences in their own words.
Hi, I'm Paula Guinna. I've been an STS member since 2004 and an advocate since 2007. Over the past year, I've had the distinct opportunity to become part of the STS fly-in in Washington, D.C. I was able to interact with other surgeons from my region and to meet representatives and senators from Oklahoma. It was a great opportunity, and I recommend it highly for anyone ambitious in politics and medicine. I plan to continue doing this for the foreseeable future.
Hello, allow me to share some thoughts about being an STS key contact. To be fair, I've never liked that term. To me, it just feels more like being an engaged member of our specialty. As background, the STS invests in a DC office staffed by several expert political consultants. Led by Courtney Yoey and overseen by an STS workforce, it's dedicated to having our specialty's voice being heard. When time permits, and I try to make time every year, I've flown to DC for a legislative day. During that time, we go from door to door meeting with senators and representatives, or not uncommonly, their staff experts. This provides a chance to advocate for what we as thoracic surgeons do, for their constituents, our patients. Similarly, I've gone to local town halls and voiced concerns or simply provided input from our point of view. Getting to know our legislators seems a worthy process. In general, legislators have been very respectful of our specialty and hold us in high respect and esteem. I try to offer them the same respect, and it's led to some good long-term relationships. They now tend to recognize me at various functions and occasionally seek out our opinions. Despite all the turmoil in our country right now, we must provide our insights and offer our help. One can never be sure we're making a difference, but if we don't make an effort, we surely won't have any impact on healthcare delivery and likely other areas important to our country's future. Thanks so much.
This is Dr. Junaid Khan. I wanted to thank the STS Key Contact Program. We had a really productive meeting in the 11th District with Congressman Mark Desaulniers. I was really impressed by the staff at the STS. They had a number of talking points arranged for me to go over with the congressman. They actually not only had the congressman there, but also his key legislative aides. I thought it was a really productive meeting, and I'm really hopeful to continue doing this to advocate for the STS going forward.
Hello, my name is Dr. Shanda Blackman, and I'm a cardiothoracic surgeon at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. I practice mostly thoracic surgery, focusing mostly on minimally invasive surgery for patients who may have lung cancer or foregut problems. I specifically chose to participate in the STS PAC and the STS Legislative Advocacy Workshops and to become a key contact member because of my passion and belief that I can make a difference. Becoming a key contact has allowed me to establish long-standing relationships with my members of Congress who affect change, specifically, as an example, to advocate for lung cancer screening. Every day of my practice, I'm in contact with patients who suffer from lung cancer. I operate on lung cancer patients, and I hear the stories again and again about how the low-dose CT scan saved their life, how they were finally diagnosed with early-stage lung cancer. When I was a resident, I can't remember seeing that many early-stage lung cancers. And now that we have improved imaging and low-dose CT screening for lung cancer, now more and more, now than ever, we're seeing patients whom we can treat with early stage lung cancer and potentially cure. This is an important way that it happens. Without your involvement, we cannot affect change. So remember, the three things that I think are so important with becoming involved with the STS PAC, the Legislative Advocacy Workshops, and becoming a key contact with Congress are that, number one, you can affect change. You too can make a difference on behalf of your patients, and this is a wonderful way to advocate on behalf of your patients. Number two, you too absolutely can become involved in the political process in a positive way. And number three, this is a wonderful way to show those people that you work with, that you care about, and especially family, what you do and how it matters and what you're doing to make the world a better place. I thoroughly enjoyed bringing my son with me on the Hill and allowing him to participate in interviews with members of Congress and express our experience and how lung cancer has affected our own personal lives and how it affects the lives of my patients. Only these stories from you can be heard from Congress, and they will listen to you. Don't be a nihilist and think that you can't make that change. I personally believe that many of the actions that were led by Courtney Yoe and the STS PAC were the exact reasons why lung cancer screening is now a prevalent way that we are early diagnosing lung cancer patients and curing people and saving lives. Thank you for your attention.
Hi, this is Erin Gillespie. I'm a thoracic surgeon at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. I first had the opportunity to participate in the STS PAC back when I was actually in my fellowship. I participated in a fly-in event coming into town, spending a two-day period in Washington, D.C., learning about all the STS does for us through their Political Action Committee, as well as spending our second day on Capitol Hill meeting with our congressmen, their representatives, and senators. It was an extraordinary experience, and as a result of that, I've actually stayed involved in the committee committee, having frequent meetings with my local congressman here in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing all the issues that are pertinent to our specialty and our patients. What I realized as perhaps the most important lesson of my involvement in the STS PAC is it's incumbent upon us as surgeons to help guide the future of our specialty and the care of our patients, making it very important for us to not only understand the politics of medicine, but to play an active role in helping to define and to guide that future. I encourage everyone to participate in this wonderful committee.
Okay. Now that you've heard from some real-life key contacts in the wild, let's move on to everyone's favorite part of any presentation, the part where we talk about money. This last year, you may have heard phrases quite frequently like, drain the swamp and get money out of politics, and Madeline, why won't you move home to Connecticut and away from those dirty politicians? But that kind of thing. But I'd like you to encourage you to look at the flip side of all those talking points. And to that end, I'd like to invite Dr. Fred Grover, past STS president and extremely engaged STS member, to the podium to discuss the importance of STS PAC, which is the quickest way to advocate for the specialty. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. Well, thanks. I want to talk to you mainly today about the PAC, but incidentally, those were great videos and well-spoken opinions. STS PAC, our Political Action Committee's primary is the primary mechanism for influencing policy and making process. It's the initial easy thing to do. It gives our Washington office people the ability to put money where they know the influence is needed in terms of committee chairs and the minority leaders in various committees and so forth that are considering legislation that might affect the care of our patients. It was started in 1997, and I fully believe that it's a professional responsibility, particularly for leaders and active members of this society, to participate in the PAC by making donations. If we end up with healthcare policy that isn't good and affects us in a negative fashion, and we haven't tried to do this, we have nobody to blame but ourselves, and we deserve the results of it. There's no minimum amount, and the real thing is that we want high participation rates. And those of you that are a lot younger than some of us sitting up here are probably going to not be able to give what we give, but you can give and be part of the process and take part in the effort. So why are there PACs? Well, a federal election campaign prohibits campaign donations from organizations such as ourselves, the professional societies and groups. So you have to have a separate group with a board that governs that so the money doesn't run through your professional organization. And the STS PAC is really the only PAC that represents cardiothoracic surgery and our cardiothoracic patients. All contributions are public record, and they can only be collected from U.S. citizens. Now this slide's kind of busy, but the main points I want to focus on are the fact that right now in the middle top, we only have a 9.7% participation rate, which is pretty disappointing when you think of all the various challenges facing health care now and the health policy changes, that people don't realize that they have to weigh in on this, or they may be on the receiving end of something very, very negative. Our average contributions are pretty good. It's over $500. And if you look down on the bottom two right corners there, there's over 300 people or contributions are made to, and over 300 contacts. So the money goes to good use. This is our performance over the last 20 years. Now these are in two-year cycles, and it gets a little confusing because sometimes we show a one-year cycle and two-year. You'll see it really peaked out right around 2008, around the Obama election. And actually, there were three of us that were presidents that were involved with the Health Policy Committee leading up to that may have had some role, but I think it was mainly the Obama-McCain election. And it's fallen off after that, right on, with one exception there. And if you look at just the last 5 years, you'll see, now these are annual, so they're smaller amounts than the others, which are two-year bites. You'll see we've kind of stalled out the last 3 years. We haven't increased. We're kind of stuck at the same level. And if you look at this slide, this shows the bar with the arrow pointing to it is the STS, and on the vertical axis is the amount of money, and you see as you go left to right for each of those sets of bar graphs each year, the amount increases, and we're pretty low on the totem pole there. Now looking at this, which I think is a little more easy to interpret, you'll see again a two-year, well, these are the presidential cycles, 2008, 12, and 16, the last three. You'll see again the 2008 election, 2008 election, almost $400,000, falling off to 236 and 273. You compare that to the College of Surgeons, which isn't quite fair, of course, because they have a lot more members. The College of Cardiology is struggling some too there, but when you look at what ophthalmology gives and what orthopedics gives, it's and there are a lot of them, but we could do more because our salaries tend to be relatively on the high end compared to obviously family physicians. And then you can compare it to the American Association for Justice, the trial attorneys, and you can see when we're raising $273,000, they're raising $7 million bucks. So good luck on tort reform, unless we can make a dent in that. And you look at the industry, Pfizer, it's almost $3 million bucks. You know, that tells you where one reason drug prices are high, probably. The American Hospital Association, that becomes more and more important as more thoracic surgeons are being employed by hospitals. And you can see we raised $273,000 and they raised $4,400,000. So we really need to jack it up a few notches here. Not that we're ever going to reach those levels, but to at least be able to impact more of our congressmen and senators in a very positive way. So that perhaps they'll hear our message a little more strongly. Now, having said that, I don't want to minimize the PAC accomplishments. We've worked hard and we're successful in being part of the reason the SGR was repealed. We've had worked for the passage of the MACRA as its replacement, and that succeeded. We so far have preserved global payments. We were successful in getting the TAVR coverage determination with surgeons involved in that process from the get-go. The lung cancer screening coverage, as was mentioned by Shonda. Prevention of onerous data collection post-surgical care. I'll get into that in a minute. That was one of our senators from Colorado. And the registry definition and the support of the 21st Century Cures Act. An act that has appropriated approximately another $8 billion over the next several years to NIH and FDA, something very important to us as surgeons. I think the major thing here is that I want to emphasize, though, the PAC is part of it, and the Key Contact Program that you just heard about is the other part. And the PAC can get things launched and open doors into representatives and senators' offices and to their staff as well. But the Key Contact Program is the importance of following up on that, both in Washington and locally, so you develop the long-term relationships with these members of Congress. So they actually become your friends and colleagues, and it's more than just going to ask them to vote for something, but they're people you eventually enjoy, and a lot of them, and you want to be around and associate and socialize with them. So the key legislative and regulatory issues that we'll be facing this year are working to be sure that AHRQ and PCORI continue to be funded. There's some danger of that in the legislatures now. On coding and reimbursement, to be sure we get our fair coding values for our procedures. On the funding of graduate medical education, which you may or may not know is underfunded right now by CMS. Healthcare reform is obviously going to be something that continues to come up. Medical device area, patient advocacy, physician Medicare payments, quality, and so we need to keep trying to fight so we have access to the Social Security death file again, which nothing related to us is been closed to outside use, and the tobacco cessation efforts that we've always lobbied for. So there are certain principles in terms of healthcare reform that determine somewhat the decisions the STS makes that have been established by the leadership of the STS. Point one is that the reform bills that come up need to ensure access to health insurance and access to health care for all American citizens, to support evidence-based health care and access to data, to promote value, that's quality over cost, promote training and adoption of technology, and to prioritize care coordination. Those are five major principles. I just wanted to share some personal experiences with real live people here about my experiences. Representative Diana DeGette is our congresswoman in our district that we live in, Denver. She's a member of the Energy and Commerce Committee, and she's the person who crossed the aisle with her Republican counterpart chair for the 21st Century Cures bill I talked about for that funding. That bill, believe it or not, in the last session of Congress passed unanimously out of the Energy and Commerce Committee. It was passed by the House and the Senate. This is a bipartisan success, and that has a lot to do with Diana being one of the five most respected House representatives on health care. She incidentally has a daughter who's a medical student at UCSF. Ed Perlmutter, I first met when Mike Hogan, I think, sent me a $1,000 PAC check when he was announcing his intent to run for the U.S. Congress. And he's been a friend ever since, so that's a good example of PAC use. He's never turned us down in the 10 years that he's been a representative for something we advocated for. He's always been very cooperative. Senator Mike Bennett is a great guy. He crosses the aisle too. He's one of, he gets up very good friends with McCain, Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, and he's done a lot of bipartisan issues. He's the one who helped save us from having to, for CMS acting on the global payment thing, working with Courtney in the Washington office to at least put that off. And then last but not least, Bill First for many years, 12 years in the Senate, a former cardiothoracic surgeon. He was on the Vanderbilt faculty before he went to the Senate. And he's the one who was able to avoid the employment of the SGR, which would have decreased our salaries 20% to 25% until we got the MACRA. So these are good friends that I've developed over the years, and you would have the same experience. And quite frankly, it's really fun to get to know these people. There are so many really good people in Congress, and right now we hear about all the jerks and all the impossible people, but the majority of them really want to get stuff done. So that's basically all I have, and but again, please support the PAC. Otherwise, we'll be left out and have our lunch eaten, basically. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Grover. I'm contractually obligated now to mention that any of you can contribute to the STS PAC at the very exclusive PAC reception at 6:30 p.m. tonight. That's taking place in the Hilton lobby, or at the PAC booth in the convention hall. I'll be down there. Or at and literally any time by tapping me on the shoulder, you can contribute. I will take your hard-earned money. Next up, I would like to bring to the floor our expert key contact panel. So if you could join me in welcoming Dr. Steve Leahy, Chair of the Workforce on Health Policy, Reform, and Advocacy, and Dr. Jess Thompson, 2016's Key Contact of the Year. They're going to tell us all about how STS arrives at the policy decisions that key contacts take to the Hill. So thank you guys for joining. So Dr. Leahy and Dr. Thompson, could you but tell us, just to get us started, about a really memorable advocacy experience that you had, whether it was a member of Congress that you met or an event you went to, and what stood out to you.
I think probably one of the most memorable experiences that I've had, I've always enjoyed going up to the Hill on the legislative flying days. Excuse me. It's it's kind of fun to see everyone and meet people from all over the United States and to kind of really be able to go up through the Capitol and advocate. But probably the most memorable experience that I've had was we invited our local member of Congress to come to our hospital. And when you go to Washington, which is very important, you might get to meet with a legislative aide or perhaps the member of Congress for 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes. But when in Oklahoma, when we invited our Congressman Russell to our hospital, we were able to demonstrate to him the impact that our hospital had on his constituents and in his district. And we were able to spend almost an hour, just he and myself, walking around our hospital. So the access to the congressman was very key to do that. It was very nice to be able to have Courtney and Madeline and the office staff from Washington, D.C. to help me get ready for that. And it really was a very delightful experience.
I think for me, a similar type of experience, the fly-ins and going up to the Hill is very, very interesting and seeing where the senators and congressmen have their offices. But the most productive one for me was in Connecticut. The University of Connecticut is the only state-run public institution in Connecticut, and we had Congresswoman Elizabeth Estey come, and she was very willing to come because we are the only public institution. She, with the help of Courtney and Madeline, this was all arranged. She came to our hospital. At the time, we were building a brand new university tower. There are lots of construction people around. There are a lot of nurses in the old hospital. We wanted her to see some of the research that is done, the research facilities, basically. She was very anxious to do that. She had made sure that she had pictures with people with yellow hard hats on and things like that, and that's good for a photo op for her. But for me, the best part about it was fighting off the dean who wanted to corner her and reminding the dean that we had invited her, not the dean. And so I got a chance to be in a room with Congresswoman Estey and her aide, and probably had 20 minutes to talk about important issues that at the time we were very concerned with the SDS. So that was a very personal type of thing. Congresswoman Estey has emailed me since, and so I think it's developing these type of relationships, and if you're lucky, have one of these things where they come to your own institution, you have a greater likelihood of developing a personal relationship.
Great. SDS puts the needs of the specialty and patients first, as we know, but navigating political tightropes can be pretty difficult. Can either of you describe, or both of you, describe an experience where you weren't quite sure what to do, and talk about how the workforce and health policy reform and advocacy dealt with the issue, or how Key Contacts navigated that?
Well, this is actually an important topic because of the times we live in right now. And I can give you the example of what happened with me. An issue came up about, it had to do with protecting essential health benefits and the Affordable Care Act and Planned Parenthood and things like that. And understanding that I, as the chair of the workforce, have a bully pulpit, I'm saying, well, we have to absolutely support this. It goes without saying, we cannot allow this to happen. And I wasn't bright enough to realize there are a lot of legitimate, decent men and women who are members of the SDS who may not feel politically the same way I do. And I offended somebody who was a really good friend of mine who felt differently. And I think it pointed out for me that we have to be very sensitive to this issue. The SDS has to be apolitical. There are certain things that we have to advocate for, and thinking of the patient first is very, very important, but we have to make sure that we do it in a sensitive way, that we don't offend other very decent members of the SDS. So that was a real wake-up call for me, and I regretted it. It wasn't that I was intentionally trying to do anything, and I felt terribly embarrassed afterwards, but I certainly don't do that anymore, and at the workforce meeting this morning, I talked about it, and that we have to be very careful. that for me was a tough one.
I'll just say that I agree totally with Dr. Leahy, but I think what I've enjoyed about the STS workforce is that all of the different things that we go after, all the different policy points, it's policy, not politics. And it's been nice because all of the points that we're trying to get advocated for, these are not about Republican, Democrat, or other. It's about things that will ultimately benefit our patients. And so I think that we've done a very nice job in general in staying apolitical. And so it helps remind me that I can feel comfortable with the STS giving dollars to someone across the aisle from where I would typically vote or register, but it's okay because we're getting our policy across.
That kind of answers my next question, but I'll ask it in case either of you have anything else to add. As you mentioned, STS members fall kind of all across the political spectrum, so the society represents them all. What do you guys prioritize when making decisions in such a complicated environment in terms of what you said, focusing on that health policy instead of the politics?
Well, I think that's really it. I mean, I try to think of what Dr. Grover has always said at every meeting that I've ever been at. He's been the one to always say, you have to think about what's best for the patients. Be sensitive to the fact that there are people with other political views. So it's just looking at policy. It's trying to say, are we going to advance a certain policy agenda, not a political agenda, to make sure that our patients are taken care of the best way? And you know, it's like lung cancer screening, a lot of these things that we have advocated for and just tried to stick to policy.
I think another piece of information that has been helpful for me is to recognize that when the STS PAC gives money to politicians or to their PACs, that it's done in a very systematic and calculated way. It's not just sort of, we like this person, let's give them money. It's who's actually going to make, who's going to be able to help us further our cause, and who's going to sit on a certain committee, and is this person going to get reelected, and have they helped us in the past? And I think that knowing that information makes it easier for me to donate to the PAC, because I recognize that it's a very thoughtful process that happens before we actually give any of our money. It's not just, like we mentioned earlier, it's not just us throwing money out there. It's very calculated.
I will say one other thing, that we certainly may identify certain members of Congress who have leadership positions in Congress. They're the ones that we want to go after. It makes no sense to donate our time, money, and effort to somebody who's just been elected to Congress, although I would like to speak with them, but with limited resources that we have to identify certain key leadership people in Congress. Now, having said that, if we identify, say, eight people who advance a cause that is consistent with what we're trying to do in the STS, human nature being what it is, I would like to make sure that we try to keep it even, so that if we could find at least four and four, Republicans and Democrats. I don't particularly like to do that, but as I said, human nature being what it is, if we can find the four and four who are advancing what we think is important for the STS, that would be great. I would like it to be even. Again, it's sort of against what I was just saying, but you know, I think that we have to be realists here and try to be give the impression that we're being fair and not short shrift to any one party or the other. And with a little effort, we can identify an equal number of members from both parties.
We are fairly even across the years. So everything feels so complicated right now. We're shifting from a fee-for-service to a more pay-for-value health system. There's these healthcare reform bills that keep coming up. Everything going on in the world sometimes feels crazy. Do you have any advice on a personal level for people who are maybe just starting to get more interested in keeping up with politics and the news, and you know, have very busy schedules? Like, just from your personal experience, any tips for staying informed and getting involved?
Two very, very good sources that I've found, well, three actually. The first source is that the STS has several emailed newsletters that come quite a bit, and I found those to be very high impact, very short and succinct, that tell me exactly what are the policy issues that we're going after this particular year. So I find that to be very helpful. And then just, I found that actually the New England Journal, every week they have articles that come out, and very often there are the updated healthcare articles for healthcare policy. And then the third source that I get is there's actually a newsletter that is actually published for the members of Congress on Capitol Hill called Roll Call. And I just go there once every other week or so, and you can see all the major stories that the politicians are actually writing about themselves. And that just kind of helps keep me abreast as to kind of what's going on in the actual political arena. Those are the three sources that I generally get, you know, for quick updates as to what's going on.
Yeah, I think that the STS newsletter helps me quite a bit. I'm always checking in with that. I think it's also talking with people, or you can send off emails to Madeline or Courtney. Keeping in close contact with the STS office in Washington helps a lot. I recognize that this is a very fluid, to the point of chaotic, situation. I mean, there may be things that we're obsessed with the cabbage bundle coming out of CMS, and then all of a sudden that doesn't exist anymore. That makes it very, very difficult for us to look like we have a steady hand on the rudder and we're going in a certain path. The issue of the global payments, that whole thing was a tremendous crisis. It took up an enormous amount of my time, not only as from my position on the coding and reimbursement, but also the health policy. So, you know, it is hard, and I just recommend the same things that Jess talked about and keeping in contact. You can send off emails to the Washington office. And other than that, there's no point in going to some of these websites because you don't know if they're terribly biased or not. You know, I try to keep very open about it and get as much information as I possibly can.
If STS could accomplish only one advocacy goal in 2018, just one, what would you like it to be and why?
I would like it so that the PAC had near 100% contribution. I mean, I think that this is terrible, what's going on right now. On an individual committee level, I think that the committee chairs have got to put the squeeze on the members and say, you know, this isn't fair. You're a member of this committee, and I think it's reasonable for me to expect that you would donate to the PAC. I guess there's many things, but I guess that would be my number one thing, and everything else would flow from that. If we had donations, for example, in the same league as the orthopedic societies or the ophthalmologists, I mean, we would be much, much better off.
I echo those comments. I think that the saying around Washington is that if you don't have a seat at the table, you are going to be eaten for dinner. And unfortunately, or fortunately, the way our political system works is that money buys you access. It buys you a seat at the table. And if we are not at the table, we're going to be eaten for lunch. And I think that the more engaged that our members are, the more of our political agenda we can push forward. And so I think it's very crucial for the STS members to become involved and to not only that, but to recognize the major successes, as outlined nicely by Dr. Grover, the major successes that are incredibly impactful that actually affect every practicing cardiothoracic surgeon.
Thank you. Last question. What do you think personally makes STS advocates so effective? Because we know that they are, with a small number of key contacts and a small in comparison to other size PAC, we're able to accomplish so much. What do you think it is about STS members that makes them such effective advocates?
I think one of the things is it has to do with the collective personality of cardiothoracic surgeons, and I'm not really being facetious about that. Cardiothoracic surgeons have to be very efficient. They have to make effective decisions quickly, and they generally don't suffer fools. they become effective because on the other side of the coin, the congressional people, the senators and congressmen and women, they don't have time for a lot of funny business. They've got the STS coming in with a series of asks that we have to really distill down to very concise questions and don't stray from the script. We're good at that. They, on the other hand, they need this information processed concisely, quickly, in a short amount of time, because right after us, they have Iowa pig farmers coming in to tell them why this is the most important issue facing the world today, the fate of grain for Iowa pigs. They can't be expected to know everything, so they have to have everything encapsulated. And I think the cardiothoracic surgeons are used to dealing in a pressure situation, they're used to being decisive and recognizing time constraints, and they package it very, very well. Other people won't be as effective if they're rambling on and they're talking about their own personal thing. Right? These people don't have time for that stuff, and we should recognize that. And you try to work with them and say, I'm going to present what we want in the shortest amount of time possible, devoid of any emotion or anything like that. This is it, just the facts, ma'am, and that's it. And I think we do that very, very well.
I think also the I think one of the evidences of why we're successful was demonstrated in Dr. Prager's one of his video clips today, where that young lady said about being a heart surgeon. And I think that being a heart surgeon does give us some, or a cardiothoracic surgeon, gives us some gravitas. And I also think that we have a lot to offer medicine. We have one of the most unique and robust databases on the planet. And we hear politicians all the time saying, well, how are we going to figure out value? How are we going to figure out quality? How are we going to figure these things out? And the STS is sitting there waving their hand saying, well, we've, to a degree, figured that out, where we can be kind of leaders in the field. I think many areas in medicine over the history of medicine has benefited from leadership provided by cardiothoracic surgeons. And I think that that still holds true. And so I think that as a group, cardiothoracic surgery can really be a force for change, not only just for our specialty, but for medicine in general. And I think that they recognize a lot of that.
That makes me think of something, Jess. You know, right now, the ranks of CMS, a lot of the people who are the mid-level at CMS are leaving CMS. They have a real problem of just manpower and getting everything done. I think that this is a unique opportunity for us because we have this very, very sophisticated database, and it is what is referred to as a Qualified Clinical Data Registry, a QCDR. And there aren't many databases that have that designation. It gives us a lot of power when we talk, people generally would listen. We think that this is an opportunity this year for us to check our guns at the door, walk into CMS and say, listen, we know you guys are not back on the heels. We're here to help you. We want to help you interpret this data, what is happening. They don't have the computing power at CMS. We have all this data. We want to ask them and have legislators help us to convince them, work with these people, work with the STS database, give up claims data, because we want to marry claims data with clinical data. We don't want CMS to be calculating a mortality risks on claims data. That's silly. So this is a unique opportunity this year because they're injured, basically. CMS is really kind of back on their heels. We could make some important strides here in opening it up and not be adversarial and say, let us help you interpret this. Give us some of your data, we'll give you some of our data, and what we will do is eventually get to the Holy Grail, where we will look at outcomes, good outcomes, and resource use. And if you have both of those data registries together, and people like us who are expert data analysts, we may actually do some real good here.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, Dr. Thompson and Dr. Leahy. Everyone join me in thanking them for their expert panel. So a lot of people are game to meet with their member of Congress, but they might be nervous about what that meeting might actually be like. So I'd like to ask Dr. Keith Horbath and Dr. Malini Daniel, two very involved key contacts, to regale us with some contrasting examples of how a meeting with a congressional office might go, so that everyone can relax and know what to expect. So rest assured, no meeting of yours will be as bad as what you're about to see.
Who's who?
Yeah, we'll explain that in just a moment.
I'm Melanie Daniel. I'm a third-year integrated resident at Penn, and I will be playing the part of a congressional staffer.
And I'm Keith Horvath, a recovering cardiothoracic surgeon who's presently senior director of clinical transformation at the Association of American Medical Colleges. And we wanted to have this little pre-dinner theater in part so that you can get an idea of what it's like. And you shouldn't be afraid. The STS office prepares you very well before you go meet with your congressman. And you've actually probably done something like this before. If you've had any meetings with any hospital administrators, if you've had any teenage daughters, you've had similar types of discussions, I guarantee you. So we hope to give you an idea of what is the wrong and right way to do this, and hopefully at the end, perhaps take a few questions as different tips and tricks that you can use to help these meetings be more successful. So, without further ado, hi there, sorry I'm late. Where's the senator?
Hey, Dr. Horn, my name is Melanie. Unfortunately, the senator had to go take a vote, so it'll just be me today.
It's actually Dr. Horvath. I was really excited to meet the senator. Are you sure I can't meet with her? I mean, how old are you anyway? This is actually, there's going to be a few breaks in this where I explain things. This is actually a very good representation of age difference between the STS member and the staffer, if any of you have done this. Back to the show.
Sorry, Dr. Horn, just me today. But don't worry, I'll pass your concerns along. By the way, we're going to need to meet in the hallway. It's just been so busy today. I hope that's okay with you. So you're here to talk about healthcare?
Yes, indeed. Here. So again, other side. The STS office will give you a packet of all of the key points with one pagers in it. The main point that we're trying to show here is you don't give it to them now, because this is what happens. And you've lost them. If you hadn't lost them with her looking at her phone, you've lost them with them going through the packet. Great. What specifically do you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I want to talk about four things. Alternative payment models, medical liability reform, the cardiothoracic surgery workforce shortage, and access to Medicare claims data for clinical data registries.
You know we only have 15 minutes, right?
Yeah. I guess I better get started. So, alternative payment models, or APMs. The society is really excited about what we've been developing for some time now. But we're worried the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, won't implement our model. We believe alternative payment can change healthcare for the better for both patients and surgeons. And
What is an alternative payment model? I didn't have a chance to look at your materials ahead of time, and I'm kind of new here. Just started a few months ago. You're going to have to catch me up.
It's a new paradigm for physician payment under the Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act, or MACRA. Physicians can go through MIPS, which streamlines several existing pay-for-performance programs, or they can participate in an APM. STS and other medical specialty societies are very interested in developing APMs for members.
Wait, can you give me an overview of MIPS? And also why you don't want to participate in it?
I can try.
No, never mind. I've got your leave-in or your leave-behind packet. I'll take it from here. What about the other things you mentioned? I think workforce shortage?
Yes. I want to ask the senator to co-sponsor. Oh, shoot. I forgot the name of the bill. Anyway, there's a projected shortage of cardiothoracic surgeons as the population ages and as physicians retire. This bill would address that by raising the cap on residency slots so that more doctors can be trained.
Yeah. My grandma got a heart transplant the other day. She didn't have trouble finding a surgeon. I don't know if I think this shortage is a real thing.
Oh, well, there is also a big problem of regional maldistribution of surgeons, too. It's not just the absolute shortage.
And does this mystery bill address that? Where is the data?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know. They just told me to talk about it. Am I going to get to take a picture with the senator?
You know, sadly, that's all the time we've got. It's nice to meet you, Dr. Horn. I've really got to go.
Okay. Thanks. Shoot. Yeah.
In case you hadn't figured out, that was a bad meeting.
And well, now I'll try something a little bit different.
Hi, Dr. Horvath. I'm Melanie, the senator's legislative director. It's nice to meet you.
Hi, Melanie. Great to meet you as well. I've heard good things about you from my government affairs team here in D.C., and they will tell you. Thank you for all the senator's help passing the 21st Century CARES Bill.
Well, thank you. I'll pass along the congratulations to the senator. Unfortunately, she had to step out to take a vote, but let's sit here in her office. Okay. I see from my notes that you've got a long list of topics to talk about. What are your priorities?
Well, I'd say our main priorities are alternative payment model development and sponsorship for S-1301, the Resident Physician Shortage Reduction Act.
Okay. Well, I know APMs are part of MAFRA, right? And the other option is MIPS, is that correct?
Yes, you got it. With MAFRA, Congress clearly intended for surgical specialties to be able to develop their own APMs. I've got a one-pager in the folder that shows the exact section of the bill if you're interested. However, based on CMS's implementation efforts so far, we're concerned that we won't have a seat at the table to get APM proposals approved and successfully move our healthcare system away from fee-for-service towards value-based care. We'd like Congress to keep an eye on CMS to make sure they're implementing MACRA according to the congressional intent.
Okay, I see. Do you know how many APMs are currently approved? Are there any APMs that CMS has developed that STS members could join?
I'm not sure about that. I think I remember something about a recent release CABG APM, but I'll make a note to ask our government relations staff who can provide you with that information.
Okay, great. Yeah. From what I know about the senator's priorities, we might be interested in joining or even leading a Dear Colleague letter on this matter. So definitely keep me in the loop. How about that bill you mentioned?
Sure. Senate Bill 1301. I noticed the senator was a co-sponsor last year, but hadn't signed on this time yet. So I just want to highlight that. As you may know, many reputable studies have predicted a massive physician shortage by 2030. Cardiothoracic surgery will be hard hit as the population ages and requires more care, older surgeons retire, and the workforce is hindered by a cap on residency slots that's been in existence since 1996. This bill would raise that cap so that we can train more cardiothoracic surgeons to meet the demand.
Is that a magic bullet? What if the studies are wrong? I mean, I hear your concerns, but you know, my boss is concerned about out-of-control entitlement spending and spending money that we just don't have. The senator is very supportive of teaching hospitals, but Medicare provides roughly $10 billion a year already towards GME, and we really want to be certain that taxpayers are getting more for their investment.
Well, the workforce shortage studies are, in fact, have been validated, and there's a lot of modeling that goes into them to demonstrate that, in fact, it is real. But this, the Physician Shortage Reduction Act only tackles the supply side of the problem, and that's true. There are several other areas of concern I'd be happy to send you information about. But for now, raising the Medicare cap is a direct way to face this emerging problem head on. I can certainly tell you things are very different now compared to when I went through my training in the 50s. So relying on such an outdated cap just doesn't make sense. I can also send you these studies I've referenced. Our team in DC finds them very convincing. And as for your last point, I do have some data here on what the economic impact of GME cuts would be for the community. Particularly, as you know, we are among the largest employers in the area.
Okay, that would be great. I can definitely ask my boss about this, especially since she did co-sponsor it before.
Fantastic. I really appreciate that.
Okay. Well, no problem. Thanks so much for coming in, Dr. Horvath. I do have to go now, but please send me that information. I'll be sure to get it to the senator's desk.
Thank you, Melanie.
And that concludes the comic relief for today's advocacy meeting.
Thank you both so much. That was excellent. I'd now like to turn it over to Dr. Leahy, who's going to announce the STS Key Contact of the Year for 2017.
Great. This is the third year for the STS Key Contact of the Year award. It's awarded to an STS key contact who is exemplified commitment to federal advocacy on behalf of cardiothoracic surgery. The 2017 Key Contact of the Year Award goes to Dr. Mitch McGee from Texas. This year, Dr. McGee traveled to Washington, D.C. to participate in the fall STS legislative fly-in, meeting with six congressional offices. He also leveraged his long-standing relationship with one of the most influential members of Congress, Representative Pete Sessions from Texas, chairman of the House Rules Committee, who represents the Dallas area. Dr. McGee was personally invited to join the Congressman's National Physicians Council on Healthcare Policy, thus getting the STS on the agenda at the November 2017 meeting, at which the STS staff brought attention to the issue of Medicare claims data access. Dr. McGee has a strong understanding of how things get done on Capitol Hill, and he goes out of his way to contribute to our successes. He has leveraged his connections in Texas to a tremendous effect. Please join me in thanking Dr. McGee for his leadership and advocacy. Thank you. Okay?
Okay, thank you. Well, that concludes the programming for this Key Contact session. Thank you all so much for joining us, and I hope you consider visiting us at the PAC booth, the PAC reception later tonight, or the Health Policy Forum bright and early tomorrow morning. I think it's at 7:30 a.m. So thank you so much, and have a great rest of your evening.